check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira squaring off in the tunnel at Highbury. Ryan Giggs' iconic bare-chested celebration in the FA Cup semi-final replay. Martin Keown's infamous clash with Ruud van Nistelrooy in the Battle of Old Trafford. For a period of time, Manchester United and Arsenal was the hottest ticket in town. And tempestuous rivalry between the perennial powerhouses of the Premier League. But those days are gone. And today, the fixture no longer holds the same intrigue as in seasons past. And I'm here with my man, Jimmy Conrad, to look ahead to Thursday's meeting between the sides and discuss whether this game can ever recapture its former glory. Diego Lasso, Manchester United Arsenal preview, and so much more begins right now. Everybody, welcome to Diego Lasso. Thank you so much for being part of the family. We are on YouTube, if you didn't know that already. And we are so close, Jimmy Conrad, to 6,000 subscribers. Wow. How good is that, my friend?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I did want to mention, though, when you said Ryan Giggs showing his bare-chested, you know, celebration. Like, the guy's not bare-chested. He's like a Sasquatch. Yeah, it's like chest hair upon chest hair upon chest hair. And that's the vision that I have, is this guy going, I know he's twirling his jersey around. It's an amazing goal, but goddamn, look at that chest hair. It's insane. It's like a forest.
The hairiest Welshman ever. Absolutely. It was massive. But we're so close to 6,000, and Jimmy Conrad is a major reason for that. So please make sure that you, you know, subscribe, spread the word. We're also on Twitter, Diego Lasso Pod. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, so much more. We just keep growing over here, and it's because of you. So please keep spreading the word. Right then, Jimmy, you are here with me today because we're going to discuss Manchester United Arsenal. Obviously, we will get into the game itself. It has some major implications for this season, but it was a good idea, I think, we thought over here at Diego Lasso to kind of discuss the game itself, this fixture itself, and historically what it's meant. Especially if you're a young listener or viewer, you may not know that, you know, especially at the beginning of the Premier League, this was it. Manchester United or Arsenal was a massive game. And I kind of want to pick up, Jimmy, from that convo that we had, you, myself, Ian, on HQ when we were previewing Manchester United against Villarreal in the Champions League, and how, you know, my whole thing was that United's obsession with the past, right? And how it's kind of damaging their present. And then when you think about it, Arsenal kind of have been dealing with the same thing. And it's probably one reason, perhaps, of many of why they can't crack, right? Right now, you know, the Man Cities or the Chelseas or the Liverpool. So I wanted, first of all, we're going to go down memory lane a little bit, Jimmy and I, and we're going to talk about both teams. And so we're going to begin with Manchester United. Just what they meant specifically from the beginning of the Premier League and what they're going through right now, right? As Ralf Rangnick, of course, comes in. So, Jimmy, I wanted your thoughts on United. You said some really good points in HQ specifically about, like, nobody really knows what the lineup is, et cetera. But it's really, let's go back a little bit to what United meant, especially in the 90s, and how a tremendous Goliath grew and kind of set the precedent for what was to come.
Yeah, I don't think you can start that conversation without bringing up Sir Alex Ferguson first. I think he really set the tone and set the bar for what was expected from the club, and not only domestically, but also from a European perspective. I have read plenty about Sir Alex. I've read some books. I saw the documentary, and just his ability to grow and learn and be exposed to a different style of play, whether it was the mid-90s AC Milan teams or whatever it was, and try to take little things and see how he can apply that to the team that he's trying to build as well, and doing it consistently. I think if anything we can look at with regard to Sir Alex is that consistency for excellence. And I think that permeated in every area of the club. And when he left, it was going to be a massive hole. And if we do quickly compare it to Arsenal, same thing happened with Arsene Wenger. Those guys were institutions, and they built this culture over many, many years. And so when that starts to dissipate, or in Arsene Wenger's case, we can get into that in a little bit. Really sad how the fans treated him on the way out. But with regard to Sir Alex, he still casts a very large shadow over that club. And I don't think it helps that he sits in the stands every single game. Just put the guy on the sideline. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's got ideas. Maybe he doesn't have to give everybody the hair blower or hair dryer treatment. You know, if they're not playing well, you can leave that to, you know, your first team coaches. But he still has ideas. He still knows how the game should be played. And he obviously was a fantastic man manager. And I just feel like that still looms large, his presence. And let's, I know that sounds kind of generic, but even with regard to Cristiano Ronaldo, it was the call from Sir Alex Ferguson that got Ronaldo to not want to go to City, to come to United and to say, hey, listen, you're a club legend. Don't do it. But now United gets saddled with one of the greatest to ever do it. No question. But I don't think they were building for him for the future. They just spent a ton of money on Jadon Sancho, and it seemed to go counter to that. Because now you have to build around this guy, just similarly to Zlatan. You have to build around these guys. Is it a bad thing? They're going to score you some goals. They're going to be match winners. I don't know. It kind of depends. But when you sign a Ronaldo, when you sign a Varane, and I heard Roy Keane and Jamie Carragher talking about this recently, you're signing these older guys to win now. It's not 4 years from now. The Greenwoods, the Sanchos, that's like we're building towards something. And when that starts to mature, then we're going to be very good for a long period of time. But right now it seems kind of stifled because you got some of these older guys that you have to build around. Otherwise, why did you sign them in the first place?
No, absolutely right.
Sorry, really I took that in a completely different direction, by the way.
No. Listen, it's all part of the ingredient of what we're trying to get to. And you said some operative words there. Win now. That was Manchester United in the 90s. It didn't matter how you played. It didn't matter if you were down. In fact, being down in a game almost seemed like the inevitable was about to happen. Manchester United would somehow turn it around. Sir Alex Ferguson is obviously the absolute key. But then the players that he brought in and the focus on the academy as well, the Neville brothers, of course, you know, David Beckham, et cetera, Paul Scholes, Nicky Butt, all these people. I mean, I'm looking at some names here. The 95-96, by the way, Premier League and FA Cup winners that included Cantona and Andy Cole, Ryan Giggs, Pallister, Steve Bruce, Peter Schmeichel was there already. The 99 treble winners as well. And then we go even further on, 2006, 2007, with Louis Saha, Wayne Rooney, Giggs, Scholes still, Cristiano Ronaldo, obviously, Patrice Evra, the treble winning years, as I mentioned. And you keep going. And it's just such a fortitude. And no matter who it was wearing the Red Devil shirt, it was, we are winning no matter what. And to your point, the shadow about Sir Alex Ferguson kind of cast that concept. And it's even harder when you're a former player of Sir Alex Ferguson and you have to manage this club. And that, to me, is a massive thing. So if we just make the turn here on Arsenal, because Arsenal, I'm thinking about them, and they have similar issues. You mentioned Arsene Wenger and the way he was perhaps treated towards the end. But he, like you said, set an institution. You know, the Invincibles, by the way, is no easy feat. It was a ridiculous achievement. And, you know, so let's talk a little bit about Arsenal as well and how they became, you know, obviously Liverpool as well, but they became a massive antithesis to Manchester United as well. They wanted to be their, you know, the Lex Luthor to the Superman, or even the other way around. How did you see Arsenal as well, specifically when you focus about their own past?
Yeah, good question. I should have said this before I started with Man United, because I think it does bring some context to a couple things happening all at once. With Sir Alex Ferguson leaving his role as manager, with Arsene Wenger essentially being forced out, I think, in my humble opinion, he's not really leaving on his own, right? It just felt like he got his hand forced, and we'll get into that in a second. But with those two stepping out, it was also around the same time of the emergence of a lot of, let's say, foreign money coming into the Premier League. So Chelsea starts to emerge in a more meaningful
way,
right?
That's the tipping point. Roman Abramovich coming into the Premier League.
There's a lot to unpack there, I think, with Abramovich coming in. And then you got Man City. When they get their money, they start to become a powerful force. And now, just I say, what, last 5-6 years, did Liverpool start to kind of refine themselves and have obviously had tremendous success in the last couple of years. And then obviously Tottenham. Whether you think about Tottenham, they were still, when I bring them in, they were still part of that top six. And yes, we can still laugh at them in a lot of different ways. And I'm sure everybody wants them to cry more because they're never going to win anything. But then you have you got the Leicester Cities, right? All of a sudden there was a down year, and Man United nor Arsenal could capture the title when everybody else was having a bit of a down year, but Leicester City comes out of nowhere. So you have these kind of one-off teams. You know, you have West Ham that's kind of going through a kind of similar renaissance. Aston Villa obviously pushing to get in the conversation. So, and Everton kind of floating around. So it's become a lot more competitive, and it's not necessarily about Man United and Arsenal all the time. And what I find that to be interesting, and why I think it's important context, is because if you were a foreign player that wanted to play in the Premier League and you were world-class, considered world-class, you were only thinking about United or Arsenal. You weren't really thinking about, hey, I'm going to go help Man City turn things around. Yeah. Very similar to what Newcastle's going to go through now. Yeah, they might have a lot of money, but
it was the royalty of the Premier League. Yeah,
100%. They had the history. They had this recency bias, right? They're winning the trophies. They're the ones that are playing the most exciting matches. And I know we'll get into some of our favorites in the past. And all of that, I think, plays into it. So now let's fast forward, or at least look into Arsenal in their past. You know, they under George Graham, they had success. You know, he was the guy that really, amongst other people along the way, but I really feel like put the flag in the ground that Arsenal were going to be a top club. And Arsene Wenger
came in. The consensus with George Graham was always like 1-0 to Arsenal, but there was wins. But it was always 1-0. Right. That's right. Go ahead. Keep going.
No. And it's interesting. Arsene Wenger comes in, and after spending some time at Monaco, and I feel like he kind of had a Jurgen Klopp type vibe. You know, like he'd had some success, but he's a bit of a foreigner. And do we want foreign concepts in the Premier League? This is at a time where foreign managers were still a relatively new concept in the Premier League when he comes over. And I remember Alex Ferguson saying this about Arsene Wenger in 97. He said he has no experience of English football. He has come from Japan. That's right. He was in Japan. And now he's telling us how to organize our football. Unless you have been in the situation and had the experience, then he should keep his mouth shut. Firmly shut. Alex Ferguson said that about Arsene Wenger in 1997 when he first came into the league. And it's very cool. And I'm actually very proud of Arsene Wenger for proving Sir Alex wrong. And they've had some great rivalries over the years and some great games. But I find that mentality from Sir Alex very interesting. And not that Klopp maybe faced the same type of style, but I know Pep did, right? Oh, tiki-taka will never work. You know, I mean, there's always some haters and gatekeepers that want to keep things the way that they are. And I think Arsene Wenger did a great job of kind of changing that and implementing more foreign-based players to really change how this game can be played in the Premier League. And we can name about probably 15 guys that have come in to make a big difference under Arsene Wenger, Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, to name a few, Patrick Vieira, of course. So I really love what Arsene Wenger did with the team. And obviously the Invincibles season was fantastic. And you know, getting to a Champions League final in 06, a little unlucky in that one, losing to Barcelona. But you know, they were there, and they were always there under Arsene Wenger until they weren't. And I think it was around the time where the emergence of all that other money came in, and it just was harder for them to compete on a more regular basis. And for the longest time, the meme was them finishing in fourth, and now they would love to finish in fourth. I mean, that's kind of how far things have fallen for the club. And I think it's going to take a while to regain that consistency for a couple of these clubs that are in Man United's in there as well, where they're just hoping to get in top four. And that just feels like it doesn't jive well with and mesh well with their history. Or at least in the last 25, 30 years. And I think that's the hardest problem for a lot of these fans, who I thought actually treated Arsene Wenger very poorly at the end of his tenure.
Yeah, the goldfish memory for a football fan is always an issue, of course. Some good points. And we're going to get into that top four conversation in a second. But just a quick thing on Arsenal, by the way, is also, you know, as much as we talk as Roman Abramovich coming in for Chelsea, and then that sort of catapulting itself into other clubs like Man City, et cetera, saying, well, we need to buy big, spend big. It's also about Stan Kroenke and what he's done as well with his ownership at the Emirates. Has he put enough effort? Definitely not from the very beginning, right? You know, relying on the family to really just take care of things while he, of course, is focusing much on American sports and everything. I did want to just quickly mention on something you talked about, which is how when Arsene Wenger came into, I remember so well, I grew up in England. He implemented something that you said that's very, very important. For a long time, I mean, it was a short beginning of the Premier League anyway, but the consensus was Premier League is for England, for Britain, and we're going to keep it sort of, you know, very British, you know, Steven Gerrard cross the pitch kind of mentality sort of thing. I mean, I grew up there, so you can't tell me shit, anybody, okay? When Wenger came in, not only did he introduce a different way of thinking, right, but he also helped. I mean, listen, Thierry Henry was always going to be a star, He was a winger at Juventus that was really struggling. Okay. He brought him in and he transformed him into arguably the greatest player the Premier League has ever seen. That's not necessarily everything down to Wenger, but Wenger definitely was a major factor. And that's what you saw with this invincible side. And then it became a perfect mix of English talent and international one. Ashley Cole, Martin Keown, Pascal Sigan was in there, Gal Clichy, Sol Campbell, Cole Touré, of course. You know, just such a perfect balance of what they were. And then that almost became eventually the, you know, the heights of what Arsenal could be. And once Wenger left, just like Sir Alex Ferguson, Arsenal struggled to try and redefine their identity. So let's move on to the top four, which is what you talked about.
Well, really quick, I have to jump in here because, and I'm not trying to defend the Kroenkes. I don't think they've necessarily run the business very well from a sporting side. I will say that they're probably making a crap ton of money. But when I look back, I'm looking at the transfer history, and they spend money on players. It's just, I think the big argument is are you spending the money on the right players?
Is it Edu then? Is it the sporting director?
Somebody has to be. I mean, that's where it falls into me. I mean, they just paid $64 million for Ben White. I mean, this is recent. Odegaard, $38 million. I mean, this is dollars and not pounds. Ramsdale, they paid $30 million. Everybody was killing them for that. Ramsdale is going to turn out to be the number one for England, in my humble opinion. In the
100%. World.
Thomas Partey, they paid $55 million for him. Gabriel was close to $30. Nicola Pepe was close to $90 million.
No, yeah, I mean, I think part of it is also just the nature of the business now, right? Like even 5 years ago, that's insane.
Again, I don't want to defend the Kroenkes. I still feel like they're not the right mix for this. However, they spent $70 million on Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, almost $60 million on Lacazette. Are they spending the money on the right guys?
It's also
that's the big question. Yeah, I mean, and obviously they had some turnover. Unai Emery, you know, you're taking some chances on managerial stuff. Man United's going through the same thing. Post Wenger, post Sir Alex Ferguson, have you brought in the right guys to actually maintain or rebuild what was already previously there? And I just don't know if that's possible, given all the other mitigating factors that are out there, the emergence of other teams, the amount of money that's out there. And you got to get everything right to establish a team that's going to be that dominant for that long of a period of time. And I don't think Man United and Arsenal are going, oh, we're going to spend the same money as Man City. We're just not going to do it. And so if you're not going to do that, you have to find that right balance.
We're literally getting into that topic right now, but it's a very good point. And that's why we're talking about this, everybody, because there's many similarities to Jimmy's point. Our producer, Des Norris, aptly mentions selling Robin van Persie to Manchester United. It was a landmark moment as well. All right, so let's talk about this top four thing, by the way, because from 96-97 season to 2013-2014, when United finished seventh, which was just like absolutely unexplainable to fans who grew up in the 90s, of course. But from that time, from 96-97 to 2013-14, both clubs enjoyed uninterrupted runs as top four. Okay. Since finishing second in 2015-2016, Arsenal have not had a top four finish. Now, 2015-2016, you may think it's not that long ago, but it is for a club like Arsenal to not be in the top four for that long. So the question, first of all, to you is this, right? We've talked about this before. Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, that's the royalty right now of the Premier League. That's the point. So which team, Arsenal or United, are closest to cracking that fourth?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at United and the fact that they finished second last year and they got to a Europa League final and only lost in penalties, whatever you want to say about how they played their tactics, different conversation, but we can sit here and say they got to a Europa League final and deserved to get to that Europa League final and didn't have enough to see it out in penalties.
And they were that close. It was remarkable. And in second, it was great. Yeah,
that close to winning, being Europa League champions. And maybe not that close to winning the league. And we could argue that Liverpool we know that they were decimated by injuries. Chelsea had that mid-season managerial change. We're focused a little bit more on the Champions League, eked into getting four thanks to Leicester City falling apart. And you just had these other teams that are kind of having an off year. So maybe it's a bit naive to think that Man United were the out-and-out second-best team in England last year. But we have that. Those are facts. And then you add Cristiano Ronaldo, you add Jadon Sancho, you add Rafael Varane, and you think this team should do better than they did last year, or at least be closer to first, because of the pieces they added and because of that year of experience of playing in some meaningful games and having that core of players that will probably come back. And they look more off of it this season than they did last year.
They're eighth.
They're actually closer to the relegation zone than they are to the top of the table,
yeah,
which is hilarious. And then with Arsenal, what I think they're actually been very good at this season in particular is beating the teams that they should or beating the teams that are, I guess, maybe in a little bit in their category where they're not maybe good enough to be in the top four yet. But and I feel like Arsenal's been good. Their big losses are against Chelsea, 2-0. They lost to Man City, 5-0, and they lost to Liverpool, 4-0. So the three big teams that you're talking about, they have given up 11 goals and scored zero. They've got a while, I think, to crack into that top three and to start taking points off of them regularly.
But funnily enough, to your point, Arsenal are fifth with 23 points. Amazingly, only five off Liverpool, six off Manchester City, obviously, if you're listening to this, watching this after the game today. So, you know, it's weird because, yes, you think, well, Manchester United did last season, but they're eighth to Arsenal, what they're doing, what they did last season, but they're fifth right now. So, who would be, if I put a gun to your head?
I would say Arsenal, because yeah. I think that they have already established very, very quickly. I don't say quickly, because the Arsenal fans would be like, come on, and take it. It took us a long time to figure out this best 11.
At a solid pace.
but they've gotten to a point, I think, a little bit quicker, where Ramsdale's our guy now. Okay, we figured it out. Ramsdale's our guy.
Best English keeper in,
absolutely. I agree. Tomiyasu, great signing.
Fantastic.
He's going to lock down the right back. Ben White, when healthy, and Gabriel are the best center back pairings. And then they got Nuno Tavares or Tierney out left. It's been solved. What I think has been interesting is Granit Xhaka hasn't been in the team because he's been hurt with that knee injury. And you have, I think Lokonga was a very smart signing. And him and Thomas Partey, when he's healthy, are a very good double pivot. I love that. Then you got these younger guys. Martinelli, obviously, can go out there and do the business and win a game by himself. You got Emile Smith-Rowe. You got Saka, who finished sixth in the young player Ballon d'Or award. And he just scored against Newcastle. And so you got him, and then you got Odegaard, which was a good signing. And then you got these Pepe, Lacazette, Aubameyang, who they just got a nice balance. And I feel like Arteta's starting to finally get into that groove of, I know my best 11. Let's look at the dumpster fire known as Manchester United. And as I mentioned on HQ and you brought it up, I think you could ask every single player, at least let's say the top five guys on the team, what do you think our best 11 is and what's our best formation? And they would all give you five different answers. And I think that really speaks to where they're not going in that same direction as Arsenal. And I just feel like because of that, there'll be some more ups and downs. Will Man United take points off of Chelsea at Stamford Bridge? Yeah. But will they also lose to Brentford or Watford? Or yes, they will, because they're just so inconsistent. Whereas I feel like we're starting to see a little bit more consistency with Arsenal. Okay. We'll raise our hand. We're not good enough to compete with the big teams yet, but we are doing a very good job of beating everybody else. And I think that will lend itself to finishing in the top four when you take the points that you should.
Yeah, one club knows better who they are as opposed to the other one. Does Ralf Rangnick help that a little bit, even though he's an interim?
I do think he helps it. I think he'll probably bring some steadiness and an idea of how the team should play. He is a master of high pressing, and I just don't think this Man United team is built to high press, at least with the big elephant in the room, Cristiano Ronaldo, in your squad. And I think that's going to be a big part of our conversation in a little bit.
Well, we will talk specifically about the game on Thursday. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Thursday's preview as United and Arsenal face each other, key matchups. But this is Michael Carrick, by the way, still in charge against Mikel Arteta. Amazing. Two center midfielders against each other as well. A new dawn in Manchester United, but also Arsenal still looking to climb up that table. Kego Lasso, United Arsenal. We'll be right back.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Welcome back, everybody. Manchester United, Arsenal. This is a big game with major implications for both teams. Of course, as we mentioned here with Jimmy Conrad, Arsenal in fifth, 23 points, and Manchester United eighth. With 18 points, and to Jimmy's point, United are staring more down below than reaching higher up. So a few stats here, and I'm sure Jimmy has his own as well, but United are winless in their last six Premier League games with Arsenal. They've never gone seven league games without a win against the Gunners. Mm-hmm. Arsenal have kept a clean sheet in each of their last three meetings with United in all competitions. United have lost just two of their 14 Premier League matches on a Thursday. On a Thursday, they win eight, they drew four. With those defeats coming at Middlesbrough in December 2002 and at home to Liverpool in May of last season. So Thursday's good for United. So this is a few stats there for you, Jimmy, but let's talk about this game. You go wherever you want, man. I mean, we can talk key matchups, whatever you want. How do you see this one? Michael Carrick, Mikel Arteta, United, Arsenal.
Yeah, I will say just based on current form to kind of continue the stats theme to get the break or after the break going. I think you mentioned it, one defeat in the past 10 matches for Arsenal. So that was against Liverpool. All right, Liverpool's playing pretty well. You'll take it. Whereas United won just one of their last eight Premier League games. So in terms of form, Arsenal are the better team coming into this game. They won at Old Trafford last season. It was the first time Arsenal had done that since 2006. So they kind of got that monkey off of their back in some capacity. And that was a win that made it 3 without a loss at the Theater of Dreams. And the last time they've won back-to-back games at Old Trafford was when? Do you know, Luis? No. When was the last time they won back-to-back games at Old Trafford?
The last, was it the Invincibles year?
1979.
Oh, my God. Even
I know, before. I know. So this is actually a big opportunity because for Arsenal in particular, because they have a 5-point gap over Man United. And if they can win that and make it 8, that is a great sign for them, of course. And I think it shows intent that they really do want to push into the top 4 and they have the belief that they can do it. And we already know they have the talent, just a matter of whether they can make that happen consistently. Whereas Man United, if they win this game, they cut that gap to 2. And it feels like such a must-win game for Manchester United, which makes me wonder, are you going to sit Cristiano Ronaldo the second consecutive game at Chelsea, whatever, Stamford Bridge, even though you're unbeaten against them in 6, and you really feel like Cristiano Ronaldo is built for the biggest games. The fact that he didn't start is still a bit surprising. Okay, but it happened. You're not going to do it twice. There's no way you're not going to start this, guys. I think Ronaldo starts up high. This is a must-win game, and anything that you have to sacrifice from a high press ideology that might be coming from Ralph Rangnick, you're going to have to make up for it in other areas because Ronaldo can win you games. He didn't come over to sit on the bench. He came over to play.
Exactly. That's why you bring him. I still stand by the fact that it was a mistake, but he's here. You got to start him. By the way, that United draw against Chelsea, I mean, commendable, right? Chelsea, very good. But the stats show that Chelsea really should have been on top. 24 shots, Chelsea. Manchester United, 3. All right.
No,
it's just the imbalance is clear. So if Mikel Arteta gets it right, you would think that Arsenal would continue. But to your point, you know, United really need this. They need this big time with Rangnick or not. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, you make a great point. What I'll say is for United fans moving forward, I think you saw what the future is going to look like in the first 5 or 10 minutes of that game with a high press Chelsea as probably the most high pressing they've done all season. So the fact that Michael Carrick said that Rangnick had no influence on his, I was like, whatever, dude, that's exactly how Rangnick plays.
And you know that you're keeping your job. So you want to just please.
Of course. And I feel like that's okay. Like, okay, great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it worked for 5 or 10 minutes. And Chelsea were under it. And they were, I think we were a bit surprised that United decided to high press and make them uncomfortable. I think that's the future for United. How long it takes them to get there and to be a well-oiled machine, that's yet to be determined. But that's a little glimpse. Can they do it with Ronaldo? I think they can for 5 or 10 minutes, but then it's going to get a little looser and they have to figure out what that next iteration, that next phase of their high pressing is once Ronaldo maybe isn't as involved in that. You can still defend with 10, but it looks a little bit different. So I think they're going to have to figure out where and when they try to win the ball and do they try to force it wide, force it in the middle, whatever. What I actually like about this Arsenal team is I think they're pretty good against teams that press, but don't press really well. And I think United's going to fall into that category. And they have players that can play out of those situations, especially if they can get it into that midfield three, the younger players of Smith Rowe and Saka who catch things on the half turn and like to break the lines with some running. I think that could cause a lot of problems for United. Another thing I think we need to talk about is the formation for United. Maguire's back and he's eligible. You have Alex Telles.
Is that a good thing, Maguire?
I don't know.
No, Rafael Varane as well. He's not going to be. Paul Pogba is too early for him. Edinson Cavani too early for him as well. So, you know, Donny van de Beek obviously can get another moment here. But
I don't know.
What do you think? Back to Maguire, though, it's not going to help him too much. I mean, I haven't seen enough for me to be completely convinced. Rafael Varane's absence, as I mentioned in HQ, is massive. He's a key point. And when you look on the other side, where Aubameyang can drift wide, allowing players like Saka, Emile Smith Rowe, by the way, who could be an absolute nightmare, is a key. So, you know, what are the key matchups that you're thinking of here if you're looking at this game?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I actually think it starts with the formation. I get the sense that they potentially could go because Luke Shaw's out. And Telles does a little bit better, I think, on the attacking side of things. I think Alex Telles just thinks a little bit more attacking-wise. You might see something similar to how they set up against Spurs, which is 3 center backs and 2 wing backs. So you could have – because I actually thought Bailly and Lindelof were pretty solid against Chelsea, all things considered.
So Maguire, Lindelof, Bailly, like all in three.
I think all three. Then you're going to have your McSauce, McFred double pivot of McTominay, who I thought was pretty good. And Fred was pretty solid as well against Chelsea. But I think those players are good. The four that I mentioned, that block of four, the 2 center backs and the 2 holding midfielders, because they sat back and absorbed a lot of pressure. So they kind of played to their strengths where they're making plays, they're making heroic things. They don't necessarily have to make the game. And I feel like at some point, the modern center back, at least, has to be able to be somewhat of a deep line playmaker. And I don't think Lindelof and Bailly have that in their bag. At times, McTominay and Fred can run with the ball and make some stuff happen. They've, you know, shoot from distance, whatever. But they still don't really fit the mold for me in what I'm thinking about, like a modern day CDM. That said, you have Telles, Wan-Bissaka. That's another player. If you're going to put him out as a wing back, he has to be really good going forward. I question that from Wan-Bissaka on a consistent manner. Sometimes he does whip in a few dimes, but it's not as consistent as I think they'd like, which means if you go with that back three and then you have Telles and Wan-Bissaka in the double pivot, you got a back seven ultimately, or a back five with the 2 in front. And you're asking Jadon Sancho, and I think Bruno Fernandes will start, and then Ronaldo be a pie. You're asking those three guys to try to go make the game. And they've done it at times, but I just feel like Arsenal are a little bit more disciplined on that side of the ball more than they ever have been in the last couple of years. And it's going to be a little bit difficult. That said, these three players that I mentioned for United, Jadon Sancho can make a goal out of nothing. Bruno Fernandes can make a goal out of nothing. And obviously Cristiano Ronaldo can make a goal out of nothing. And that has to be taken into consideration. So
I do go back to your first point, though. Some great notes there. I do go back to your first point, which is like Manchester United have to be very good and selective at their pressing. And so you have to figure out how you do that. And as well, by the way, not forgetting, which what you said is the Lokonga-Partey partnership is going to be key here as well, allowing Arsenal to really play their game. It's going to be a good game. Should be a good game.
It's going to be amazing. I can't
wait. I ask you a prediction.
Man, I've been Mr. Straddle on the Fence draw here. I just think there's a lot at stake. I think that Arsenal would be happy with the draw, Man United less so. Not to say that they won't have that urgency. I don't think Arsenal will be going out to play for the draw. I think Arsenal actually catching United at the right time when they're still somewhat vulnerable. They have a new coach, but he's not there yet. They have Carrick, who's still probably buddies with a lot of these guys, still got the Ole Gunnar thing. Even though they went down to Spain and got a good result against Villarreal and got a big draw against Chelsea, do they have enough here to go get a result? I think if they do, it's going to be like a 1-0 win on a set piece, and it's a game they don't dominate. I think Arsenal is going to have more of the ball. With regard to the matchups to look out for, I think Bruno Fernandes against Partey or Lokonga is going to be a good one. I'm kind of curious to see where Jadon Sancho sets up. If Ronaldo's really up high, he does have a tendency of drifting off to the left, which gets in the way of Sancho. So I could maybe see Sancho set up on the right side. So him versus Nuno Tavares is a really good matchup. And obviously, Jadon Sancho scored in two straight games. So I think we're going to start to see this, hopefully, yeah, confident Jadon Sancho, right? So
yeah,
there's a lot here. And I hope Saka's healthy. He hobbled off in the second half against Newcastle with a bit of a hit.
Not forgetting Martinelli, by the way.
He scored a great goal as well. Yeah. I know. And you got Odegaard and Smith Rowe. I mean, they got options.
Jimmy, I'm going for a draw. I'm telling you right now.
I think the draw is probably, like, when you go on Caesar Sportsbook, the draw is plus 255. Man United's the favorite at plus 100. Arsenal to win straight up is plus 265. I like the draw as well. I could see a 1-1 here. And even though United won't be thrilled with that because it's a big opportunity for them to gain some ground on Arsenal, I just feel like they're not there yet. And they need to figure out who their best 11 is. And that's still yet to be determined.
Yet to be determined, but regardless, it's a big, big game for both clubs. Mikel Arteta, Michael Carrick, and of course, Ralf Rangnick as he enters the frame this weekend. Before we go, a few questions here. We talked earlier on about some great moments in this fixture. So many classic memories if you're a United or Arsenal fan. If you're neutral, to be perfectly honest, some big games. Do you have a favorite moment, Jimmy Conrad, of this particular fixture through the years?
That's a good one, because there was a stat that I saw that I think from 1997 to 2005, there were 7 red cards shown.
That's right.
It was really chippy, especially with Patrick Vieira and Roy Keane. And there's one in September 2003, and I remember this game, the Battle of Old Trafford, apparently it's called. And there was a fight between Arsenal players and United players who felt that Ruud van Nistelrooy had cheated to get Patrick Vieira sent off, if people remember that one. And then a season later, Manchester United ended the invincible run.
Yeah,
and it was a bit controversial, which led to more of a fracas in the tunnel. So that one stands out. What's interesting is that our producer Dez, and I love this point about how maybe that the end of the era of these two teams was the movement of Robin van Persie from Arsenal to United, and then when he won the title with United, it's like, all right, I guess this rivalry is dead now. This isn't even any fun anymore. But there's one game, if you remember, and because I'm wearing a United kit, I'm trying to help pump them up a little bit. And maybe I should be pumping up Arsenal because they've been suffering for a while too. But the Manchester United won 8-2 in August 28th, 2011. That 8-2 game at Old Trafford was something special. Wayne Rooney had a hat trick. There were 5 other different goals scored. It was just crazy, crazy game. I don't think we're going to see anything like that, but I wouldn't mind seeing some goals in this one. I just feel like it's going to be a little bit tight. How about you though, Luis? There's so many games to choose from. I'm kind of curious who you're going with.
I feel really bad because I'm also opting for a United win game. But I do remember, Arsenal fans, that 1-0 with Thierry Henry scoring the winner. That was a good game for your boy.
Is that the one where he popped it up and then volleyed it in?
Yeah.
Dude, that might be the best goal in Premier League history. So I'm glad you brought that up.
It's what made him the greatest Premier League player ever, I think. Thierry Henry.
So good. Absolutely. So good.
Listen, I'm nostalgic. 1999 was a very special year for me. My last year of high school, I was in England and I remember it so well, just watching all these amazing matches and, you know, just paying, you know, you couldn't do anything but salute what Manchester United did that year, winning the FA Cup, the Premier League and the Champions League. So I got to go to the FA Cup, the semi-final of the FA Cup. Manchester United won 2-1. David Beckham scored first and then Dennis Bergkamp actually scored in the 69th minute. Mm-hmm. But then very late towards the game, Bergkamp, you know, took a penalty and Peter Schmeichel, Yes. I wasn't going to say it. The game was at Villa Park, which is why it was so but anyway, Schmeichel saved Bergkamp's penalty, which prompted to what we talked about at the very beginning of this episode, Ryan Giggs to show his 1970s Anchorman chest hair, but scoring a ridiculous solo goal, which made it 2-1. And the teams, and both of them, by the way, Freddie Ljungberg, Ray Parlour, Vieira, Anelka, Bergkamp, and on the other side, I mean, Dwight York was on the bench for crying out loud. I mean, they were saving
him. That seems ridiculous. I mean, I think that's another thing too. When you look back at those teams, they're just so much better than the teams that have been put together
Yeah, look at those lineups. He's showing up if you're watching it on YouTube. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And it's just a staple of what the Premier League represented and how big Manchester United was. But it was another example of how good both these games was. And what you said, Jimmy, about how actually Sir Alex and Arsene Wenger had so many tiffs. And that was a very good example. But that's it. Go ahead.
I want to remember a little bit more about that game that snapped the invincible run. And is when Ruud van Nistelrooy dove to get a penalty and then Wayne Rooney scored late. And all the players were ridiculing, and Arsene Wenger were ridiculing Ruud van Nistelrooy for being a cheat and that he dove. And there was a fight in the tunnel. And that's when Cesc Fabregas, Sir Alex Ferguson, came out. And that's when he threw a piece of pizza and it hit Sir Alex Ferguson in the
face. Pizzagate.
Pizzagate, dude. That's unbelievable. 17-year-old Cesc Fabregas. Look at the cojones on that guy whipping a piece of pizza at Sir Alex Ferguson's face. You can't make this stuff up.
What flavor pizza was it? That's the quick question.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Let us know on Google Lasso. I think it was pepperoni because that adds more. But that's it. Manchester United, Arsenal, 3:15 Eastern on Thursday. This has been so fun to go down memory lane and, of course, look about the present and the future of both clubs. Jimmy Conrad, thank you so much, brother. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
No, this is going to be a great game. I'm excited that we actually got to focus on one and really dive in, not only to the history, but to maybe some more of the, I'd say, advanced tactics, but like kind of the nuances and subtleties of the game that really make me geek out about it. So I appreciate the invite to be on.
No, 100%. Hopefully we'll do some more. But LME over here, Jimmy Conrad, Gigo Lasso, thank you so much for being part of the family. Jimmy, thank you so much, brother.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, GigoLassoPod, YouTube.com/GigoLasso, CBS Sports, CBS Sports app, and of course, anywhere you listen to your pods, and make sure to watch it on YouTube. Have a great, great rest of your week.
Let's go! It's the most all-star studded challenge ever, and this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
That's
The Challenge All-Stars, new season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.